Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Monday, the 13th of June, 2016. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. An independent ferry serving communities in southeast Alaska is struggling to come up with the funds to continue its service, and the operators are working with federal managers to figure out the next steps. Ketchikan Daily News reports the North End Ferry Authority's Rainforest Islands Ferry Service is currently on hold as that vessel gets repaired. The authority's interim general manager, Robert Baker, says even if the ferry does get fixed, there will still be problems with getting it back into operation due to funding issues. The authority is figuring out the future of the ferry with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which funded its launch with a $3 million loan in 2011. They have yet to pay back. That service operates between Kaufman Cove, Wrangell, and South Mitkoff Island near Petersburg. The small ferry Leconte is tied up today due to a mechanical problem. As a result, the Juneau-based ship is not sailing its normal Monday route to Gustavus and Hoonah. The Alaska Marine Highway System says reservation staffers have been contacting booked passengers. The nature of the mechanical problem was not immediately available. 235-foot Leconte carries up to 225 passengers and 35 cars or trucks. It also sails to Angoon and Pelican. Whale stranding experts are again tracking a whale caught in an anchor line in buoy in southeast. The 40-foot-long adult humpback was spotted near Thomas Bay east of Petersburg yesterday afternoon by the motor vessel Catalyst, a boat that offers cruises in southeast. Three members of the statewide marine mammal stranding network from Petersburg responded Sunday evening. Don Holmes, Sonny Rice, and Scott Roberge found the Catalyst and the entangled whale near Farragut Bay. With an inflatable skiff and driver from the Catalyst, that team was able to attach another telemetry buoy to the whale. Holmes, the president of the Petersburg Marine Mammal Center, says the whale looked healthy and was swimming quickly, about 4 to 5 miles an hour. He says the humpback was trailing one buoy and was not entangled with another whale, as experts had feared last week. As of this morning, that whale was recorded near Seymour Canal on Admiralty Island, closer to Juneau. That's where that creature was first sighted dragging line, an anchor, and two buoys June 1st. Several attempts have been made to remove the gear, and the whale already ditched one tracking buoy near Cake last week. A Marine Mammal Stranding Network team from Juneau may try again, weather and location permitting. Frustrations boiled over at a meeting in Petersburg last week of the organization that sells electrical power to Wrangell, Petersburg, and Ketchikan. Board members of the Southeast Alaska Power Agency, or SEPA, ultimately decided to delay a vote on a takeover of operations at the Swan Lake Hydroelectric Power Plant near Ketchikan. Here's more in this report. SEPA is a joint organization formed by the three communities, and it sells electrical power to the local utilities from two hydroelectric plants. It owns those plants at Tyee Lake near Wrangell and Swan Lake near Ketchikan, plus the transmission line that connects the two remote sites. SEPA contracts with Ketchikan Public Utilities for the operations at Swan Lake, but CEO Trey Acteson this month asked board members to take a vote to end that contract in a year's time.
I mean, there's some clear benefits to KPU for doing this. They still would get their wholesale power delivered to their front door. At the wholesale power rate, we've already shown that reliability is not going to go down. More than likely, it's going to be the same people at the plant doing the same job.
Acteson said under such a change, four hydro plant staffers at Swan Lake would switch from working for KPU to working for SEPA. The organization already made the same move with operations at Tyee Lake in 2014, ending a contract with the Wrangell-based Thomas Bay Power Authority.
And the sky didn't fall like everybody said it was going to, and lights didn't go out, and power continues to be delivered.
Acteson thought it was the best business move for the agency to have control of operations at the plants it owns instead of contracting out that work. SEPA board member Joe Nelson of Petersburg supported the change. He thought it would end problems that can arise from contracting for O&M or operations and maintenance of a power plant.
You've got a contractor that's responsible for the O&M of the project, and then you have something occur, something that needs to be fixed. Is that O&M or is that go beyond it? And those lines are always kind of gray. And when that happens, it results in delays, It results in hurt feelings. It results in a lot of negative things. So.
For electrical customers in Wrangell, Petersburg, and Ketchikan, those delays in fixing problems on the power grid can lead to longer interruptions in service. SEPA just started a multi-million-dollar project to increase the height of the Swan Lake Dam, which will increase water storage there. During construction, it will continue to be one of the main power sources for the three communities. That's not an issue, but as it did with the takeover of operations at Tai Lake, the board discussed friction between management at SEPA, the plant owner, and its contractor, KPU. Board member Lou Williams III of Ketchikan is also the board chair of KPU. He didn't like the way the takeover had been proposed. He acknowledged the idea made sense, but took issue with Acteson's approach.
And I asked him, you know, why don't we, it's best for the community to do this someday. Why don't you try to work, be the bigger person, and work with these guys and get a nice trusting relationship. And that's a great way to take it over. Well, instead we're going to do a hostile takeover. And it just makes me lack more confidence in your management.
Judy Zenge of Ketchikan agreed that the idea probably made sense in the long run, but did not think the time was right. Stephen Przunka of Wrangell noted the change was not an easy one for the end of the Thomas Bay contract at Tyee Lake.
It caused a great deal of division in our community, a lot of heartache for a lot of people, and we're still dealing with the repercussions of that from the Thomas Bay office being shut down.
And KPU's Andy Donato, also a SEPA board member, thought there were many benefits to keeping the contract with KPU. He thought the local utility could mobilize employees more quickly than SEPA.
The road washes out. KPU can appoint a special crew, get machinery in. They have done this for the road washout. So historically, there's this benefit. They've been there for, 34 years. So they have this history.
Other board members thought that ending the contract was probably a good idea eventually, but wanted to wait on that decision. Board Chair John Jensen of Petersburg noted he was initially really upset with the end of the Thomas Bay contract, but later changed his mind.
Maybe this is another process that's going to probably take some time, not vote on it today and slam the door. I agree with what's been said at the table here. It's not an instant process. I do agree with SEPA taking over O&M, but I think we need to keep in our discussions a little bit longer and work out the details, and maybe everybody will come to grips with it a little bit better like I did. It took a long time. So.
The board ended up voting 4-1 to table the motion to provide 1-year notice to end the contract. Joe Nelson of Petersburg was the only vote to proceed. At the end of their meeting, board members and staff sounded a more cooperative note. Clay Hammer of Wrangell urged the communities to continue working together.
The success of SEPA and the two operations in question have always been contingent on all three communities coming together and putting their best foot forward to make sure that the needs of all of us are met. The spirit of collaboration between all three communities, and I don't want to see that in.
Board members agreed to bring that issue back up in the next year. And we'll have more news from that organization's two-day meeting in Petersburg coming up later this week on local news. A Juno startup that wants to build its own hydroelectric plant could soon get the rubber stamp from the federal government. Duff Mitchell, Juno Hydropower's managing director, said the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, approved that company's Environmental Impact Statement, or EIS.
We've gotten good marks, so to say, for making sure that we're building this project properly.
EIS is proof that environmental concerns tied to building that hydro plant have been addressed. It stopped short of giving the company permission to build its plant, but Mitchell expected that permission is coming.
The EIS needs to be recorded in the Federal Register, and then the document will be submitted to the FERC Commission for their final, blessing, so to say.
That final blessing is Juno Hydropower's FERC license. Mitchell isn't sure when that will come, but he expects it soon. Mitchell formerly worked for Cake Tribal Corporation. He was also involved in efforts to study the potential for hydro plants in Thomas Bay near Petersburg in the past decade. Juno Hydropower started implementing plans about 7 years ago to dam up Sweetheart Lake, that's southeast of Juno, and build a hydro plant there. The proposed plant would power a district heating system that would remove heat from the Gastineau channel and pipe it into Juneau homes and businesses. It would also allow that company to sell power to Bing Industries. Mitchell says the EIS was drafted with input from state and federal agencies, including the U.S. Forest Service and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
We actually worked with the agencies to come up with and to negotiate out all of the conditions. So when FERC made its ruling, you know, all of those issues were addressed and addressed to the satisfaction of the agencies involved.
A few of the things the company was required to check out were impacts to fish, marine mammals, and water quality. In other news, interior lawmakers with the Alaska House are opposing legislation that would use Alaska's oil wealth nest egg to help address the state's bulging budget deficit. Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports that all but one of the Interior Delegation's House members say they either opposed the measure or were undecided. Last week, the Senate passed that legislation. It would allow for draws from the Alaska Permanent Fund earnings based on a percentage of the fund's market value, but would also reduce annual dividend payments to $1,000 starting this year. The measure is expected to close about $1.2 billion of Alaska's more than $3 billion deficit. It was introduced as part of a broad package aimed at decreasing the debt, but interior lawmakers say those extra cuts likely will not pass, making that bill less beneficial. U.S. Forest Service is asking for a public comment on a proposed timber sale on Wrangell Island. That project could result in the harvest of 65 million board feet of old-growth timber from over 5,000 acres. Aaron Bolton has more on that story from Wrangell.
The U.S. Forest Service released five alternatives in their draft environmental impact statement for the Wrangell Island project on June 2nd. Its preferred alternative would allow two-thirds of the acreage to be selectively harvested and a third clear-cut, producing about 65 million board feet. That's down 8 million board feet from the last time the Forest Service sought public comment on the idea in the fall of 2015. Wrangell District Ranger Bob Dalrymple says the harvest would take place over 3 to 5 years.
It's wide open to the public right now. Depending on the results of that public comment, you know, we'll have to decide at that point whether we would need to do additional alternatives or not and put out another draft, or we would just move to the final.
The Forest Service has been working on the project for over 5 years. With the impact statement in the 45-day public comment period, the public can hash out what they would like to see. The five alternatives range from about 43 million board feet to 65 million, or no timber sale at all. Board member of the Alaska Forest Association, George Woodbury, says he's disappointed with the size of the harvest.
Without volume, you don't have the raw material to run the operations, you're out of luck. So it's very critical to take hard looks at how you can get the volume out and put out sales that are economic.
Woodbury says he's concerned about the lack of timber sales in Southeast, leading to more mills closing their doors.
Well, there's been a huge shrinkage of the industry because of the lack of timber, and the objective that the association has had is to try to restore some of those jobs in the and create the wealth that those mills produced and help the economy of both Wrangell and the other towns in the Southeast.
Dalrymple says the low volume is partially because Alaska is no longer exempt from the roadless rule, a Forest Service ban on logging and road building on millions of acres of national forest. He says the Forest Service also wanted to relax some of the Tongass Forest Plan's environmental protections to boost the volume of the proposed harvest.
That got really complicated in the sense that the forest plan itself is now under amendment. So we then went back and basically all of the alternatives right now stay completely within the existing forest plan. There's no reduction or relaxing of any environmental protection measures that are provided by the forest plan now.
Some consider those environmental protections too mild. Buck Lindenkugel is an attorney for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, or SEAC. He says they are unhappy with the volume of the proposal.
Instead of cutting the rest of the old growth that supports a whole variety of uses on Wrangell Island, the Forest Service ought to look at ways of integrating stewardship, restoration activities, and supplying timber off the existing road system to the small mills in the area.
Lyndon Kugel thinks Southeast should no longer rely on the timber industry as an economic driver.
The driving economic forces continue to be fishing and tourism and recreation, as well as traditional uses, you know, folks going out and hunting and fishing their own to meet their own needs.
The proposed alternatives could build up to 17 miles of new national forest roads, some of which will stay open to the public, and about 15 miles of temporary roads. Wrangell District Ranger Dalrymple says the earliest timber sale would be mid to late summer 2017. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Public comments will be accepted until July 18th. There are paper copies of the draft environmental impact statement at the Wrangell Ranger District and the Forest Supervisor's Office in Ketchikan. And you can find the link to that statement and instructions on how to submit comments along with this story on kstk.org. For local news, I'm Joe Vicnicki.